Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a favorite guest, one of my favorite people to have conversations with because she's so knowledgeable. And as we enter the new year, it's always about acquiring more knowledge so that you can navigate through whatever. And in this case, it's going to be the education system, which to me, as I'm sure Lynn will agree, is the foundation for everything. As we were taught, as you know, the foundation we learned as kids has carried us through and continues to as adults. So it's really important to keep abreast of what's going on. So we're going to talk today with our favorite person, the Common Core Diva, Miss Lynn Taylor. And Lynn, you sent me some information which I don't even have words for what I thought as I was reading it, but I think our listeners need to be up on what's going on. And there's something new on the horizon called a beta baby. What is that?
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Elena. And it's wonderful to be back with you. And it's always a joy to be with you. Sometimes we get into topics that are just not so joyous, but it's always good to have like-minded people, especially your listeners, who are so in tune with what is going on and are so gracious in returning to hear what we discuss. So a beta baby, now you need to be careful because if you do a general search, you might come up with an existing health condition. However, if you type in beta baby generation, you will find that that is the name that has been given to every child who will be born between January the 1st, 2025, and December 31st, 2039. And you're probably going to say, well, now, why in the world would that be a concern? Well, hang on just a second, because let's review the other labels that other generations have had, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first one that was given a name was the greatest generation, and that was 1901 to 1927. The silent generation, 1928 to 1945. The baby boomers, 1946 to 1964. Generation X, 1965 to 1980. The millennials, or otherwise known as Generation Y, as in the letter Y. That would be 1981 to 1996. Then we have Generation Z, which was also called the iGen, and that was 1997 to 2010. Then we had Generation Alpha, which was 2010 to 2024, which brings us up to beta. Now, not only is it the second letter in the Greek alphabet, henceforth we have alpha, then we have beta, but I want you to understand that from Generation Z to present, that's when Common Core has been the main theme in education. And if you look at the textbook definitions of what beta stands for, especially from a software business perspective, which our education system has so become, as opposed to what it should be, which is about imparting knowledge in academics, you see that business is treating our children as a product in a second stage of some sort of AI development that they're testing on the children. And then later on, when they tweak whatever it is they're testing in this system, they're going to unleash it on everyone. That should scare the bejeebers out of every parent who's either just becoming a new parent this year or is expecting one anytime in the near future. I know it sure scares me, and I'm not even pregnant.
My goodness. So I can't even, we've seen all of these iterations of the changing landscape of education. What else could they possibly be, in your opinion, testing on them? We've done algorithm-driven. We've done, it's like a prison system where you have all these lockdowns, locked-ins, and police now in there. What else can they be testing, do you think?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Dr. Elena, because you know how many times have we discussed the actual rewiring of our children's brains under this kind of system? I mean, I honestly do not get it. And if you happen to see the Prudential commercial, you are not going to believe what you see, because you see this theater-type setting of all these different generations, with the exception of two, and that would be the greatest generation and the silent generation. Now, very easily, they could have found someone from at least the silent generation, because I know there are people who are still alive and kicking who are in their 80s and 90s, and we have some who are even 100. Why were they not in the commercial? But the entire commercial was talking about these other generations going, well, good luck to these babies because they're going to be able to live longer than any generations before them, and they're going to have health care that's AI driven, and they're going to have everything that's AI driven. And oh, by the way, Prudential's going to give them at birth $150 to the parents, so that by the time that child reaches retirement age, they'll have a whopping $100,000. Now, let's stop and think. $100,000 in today's economy is not enough to retire on. So what in the world are they thinking that, oh, yes, by the time these children reach retirement age, that that's going to be even enough? And one of the people in the commercial even says they're going to be retired for much longer than any of the rest of us. What does that mean?
I don't even know what that means. And, you know, from the standpoint of the marketing, I mean, I guess they want you to live forever so they don't have to pay out long term. I mean, what's the point of that commercial exactly? And who is it targeting? You know?
Well, it's targeting parents to incentivize them to come to big insurance, because after all, big insurance is going to help them. Well, look at what big insurance has done to our healthcare system. Look how it has colluded with our healthcare system to overreach into our education system. It is treating it, it's become that education has become this profit-making business for everyone under the sun, except those who are teaching and those who are learning. They're not being profited anything, whether it's financially or knowledge-wise. They absolutely are not. And it absolutely just incenses me that here we are so going to try to continue to dumb down our culture, that AI is not scary, that it's not going to harm us. But when you have a document that just came out from the U.S. Department of Education that says here how AI is going to take over every single aspect of your life, including what you learn and who teaches, to the point of we're developing humanoid robots that will be out anytime this year. It's like, what dope are you people smoking, and what dope is it you think that we need to start smoking to think this is all okay?
So it's like a template here. We're talking about artificial intelligence overriding humanity in a lot of ways. And so if it's in the military, if it's in the healthcare sector, if it's in the education sector, what does that leave for imagination, for the soft spot of everybody, of every profession? There's an art to healthcare. There's an art to teaching. All that goes by the wayside. It becomes very rigid, standardized, and I would say probably as it always is, to the lowest common denominator.
Well, absolutely. But I mean, take for example, right now, you've got the neuromuscular disease therapeutic market. It's supposed to grow by almost $14 billion just in the first 4 years of this generation beta, to use AI-powered market evolution in how people are treated for neuromuscular diseases. That's just one snippet of our healthcare system. And why in the world would we say, okay, something as sensitive as that, we're going to trust to something that is still so unknown? And if you look at some of the companies that are involved in this, Dr. Elena, you've got AbbVie, okay? You've also got AstraZeneca. You've got Merck. You've got Takeda Pharmaceutical. You've got Rovion, Pfizer. I mean, all kinds of these well-known healthcare systems. So if they're going to do this with neuromuscular, what are they going to do with the other ones? You know, What in the world are they going to do? And they're going to sit here and tell you that, oh, yes, the market growth will be in the millions and millions of dollars. Well, who in the heck is that going to benefit? Is it going to benefit we the people, or that family that is raising that baby that probably they've waited all their lives for? What is this saying to them? It's saying that your child is not worth anything other than a profit margin for some big pharma group.
Well, that's fascinating. So from what you're saying, I'm seeing a bigger picture kind of come into focus where, they may be living longer, right? But they're going to be on every medication known to man to prop them up so they can live longer. So it's not like you're living longer, healthier, right? If you're telling me the diseases are expected to explode, then this is just something you'll have to take every day for the rest of your life to stay afloat. Right. And you become a cost center, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But go look at the current CDC recommendations from birth to 6 years old that are expected to be unleashed on these beta generation babies. And then that doesn't even continue to look further down the road. What happens to the ones who are 7 to 18 or 19 and older? What happens to your ladies who are pregnant? I mean, come on. And if you look at this, they're starting with recent births, and this will include the beta generation, that you're supposed to, at birth, get your RSV antibody, your hepatitis B. You're supposed to, within the first month of your life, get another RSV, another hepatitis, a rotavirus, a DTaP, a HIV, your pneumonia, and your polio. Now, by the time you're in your fourth month, another stupid RSV. How many have we already given? That's three. This child isn't even 6 months old, okay?
Yeah.
Another rotavirus, another DTaP, another HIV, another pneumonia, and another polio. And then it goes on from there. It is absolutely off the charts. And then we start in with COVID and the flu and the mumps and the measles, rubella, chickenpox, and hepatitis A. That all starts by the time the child is 6 months and stretches until the time they're 6 years old.
No, it's dozens of vaccines, literally.
Right.
But it goes out from there, doesn't it? So if you're talking about an adult, you're talking about disease states being, growing in the adult population. This is a cradle to grave type of system that somebody's going to profit from.
Absolutely. And don't think that artificial intelligence is not roped into this. I mean, just don't even think. In fact, give me just a second. I'm going to type this in and see what I get. So I tell you what, this is just absolutely off the charts. It's beyond stupid. It's criminal. It is absolutely criminal. And I don't understand how we can be okay with this. I don't understand how we can be okay with a president who is propping up, oh, yes, let's go ahead and get more artificial intelligence going. Because after all, it's our savior. Okay, right now, if you go to the CDC and you type in artificial intelligence, you're going to get seasonal flu will have 45 articles, disease forecasting and modeling will have 25 articles, data modernization at 18 articles, then it goes on from there. So, yeah. Oh, and for the general public, 60 different articles. Public health professionals and partners, 32 articles. Healthcare providers, 15 articles. It goes on to tell you that they're going to, from the CDC's parameters, artificial intelligence and machine learning, the role of artificial intelligence in the future of work. Oh, my stars. Artificial intelligence in medicine, public health prospects, and challenges beyond the pandemic. Ooh, okay then. Generative artificial intelligence. Well, you might be asking, well, what the heck is the difference between artificial intelligence and generative? From my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, generative means it is constantly seeking data on you to generate more information. Now, like I said, I could be absolutely wrong on that.
On that note, let's take our first break because that's a lot to digest and come back. So we're going to come back after our first break. Thank you. You're living in the solution. Understanding health insurance is becoming more challenging. If you currently have insurance, you've probably noticed that it costs more to see your doctor. And if you're able to keep your doctor, it takes longer to get an appointment. The bad news is this trend is projected to continue. Your costs will likely continue to rise, while your healthcare choice and access will continue to fall. The good news is Peachtree ENT Center has the answer to this problem. We're committed to working with you. We specialize in providing affordable care for patients without insurance, those who are underinsured, and those with high deductible or catastrophic coverage. And we offer same-day appointments. You no longer have to choose between staying healthy and paying bills, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts. Call 404-591-9100 or visit us at peachtreeentcenter.com.
If you missed the show, you can catch it on drlanagegeorge.com, iTunes, Spotify, and a host of multimedia platforms. You can follow her on Living in the Solution on Facebook. Subscribe and share it with your friends. You're listening to Dr. Elena George, Advocate for Living in the Solution.
Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And prior to the break, Lynn, you were giving us a really good foundation of the way that AI is being threaded through literally every single aspect of our society. And the interesting thing about it is that, you know, as the generations go, we know what came before. And I'm sure, you know, a few generations, a couple of generations behind us know, but the beta generation will not have any idea of thinking on your own, not being attached to some sort of device where you can, you know, call in whatever information you want and have it spit it out. So there's going to be very little critical thinking, investigative skills, being able to think outside the box and ask questions. Does it seem to you that once this is spoon-fed and you don't have a frame of reference, that that changes everything in terms of how much power you cede to something outside of yourself?
Well, it's absolutely going to play into everything, because you're only going to be able to see what is wanted to be seen.
Exactly.
In fact, the reason I know this is because the power school that is in it's in a lot of schools in a lot of states, and it's a data system that Pearson Publishing came up with about the time that Common Core rolled out. But if you look at the little video for their new product called Power Buddy, it's an AI-driven system to attract children. And let's say they want to learn about butterflies. Well, rather than going outside and running through the yard with a butterfly net and, you know, that sort of thing, this artificial intelligence will pull up anything that it can possibly find on butterflies and put together a lesson almost instantly for your child. Now, let's say you're a parent. If you're concerned about Johnny and Susie's progress in school, it can generate, okay, here's a graphic. Here's where Johnny and Susie were today. Here's where we think they'll be tomorrow. But if you really want to know what Johnny and Susie are doing, here's how they're stacking up against everyone else. What is it doing? It's tracking every child in that system. And it's giving a false narrative. So, no, you won't be able to see yourself. In fact, think about the fact how artificial intelligence is being groomed to replicate you as a avatar or your voice. Why in the world would a system want to replicate your voice? It's one of the most personal things about you. Why? Because it can be used against you in the social credit system. It can turn you into a Bitcoin or a blockchain bit of information to be managed and controlled through a system that doesn't care about your personality or your God-given gifts or even how your voice is unique. I mean, my goodness.
It sounds like it's an automated version of what they've been trying to accomplish with No Child Left Behind and the rest of the things that we've spoken about over the years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of, the marketing is really ingenious, right? Because the marketing is telling you you have unlimited, you know, access to information at your fingertips. That's what it's trying to say, that if you access it, the world is everything to you. But in actuality, the way it could be programmed is that it cuts you out and off from everything that's going to question the narrative or the system. And if you don't have the sense to go, well, at some point you may not even be able to go and look at alternate sources. We'll never know really what the truth is. It's what they say it is.
Well, they've been culling our resources since Common Core came into town. It absolutely has. I mean, you go back and you try to find a textbook that was pre-Common Core. It's all but gone. You might have people like me who have saved books for teaching purposes that were pre-Common Core. But if you go to your public library, it's going to be very hard to find something that is not in the Common Core era, as I call it. But let me shift over to this report from the U.S. Department of Education, because this is where they're discussing the fact that this is the shape of AI in teaching and in learning. And on page 11 of this particular document, and I think it's in the resources that we can provide for your audience, you're going to see artificial intelligence is like the hub in the middle of a wheel. And then if you think about that wheel shape, starting at the top, where I guess on a clock number one would be, you have computer vision that will take over your scene reconstruction or images that you see or motion or your recognition. Now, this doesn't say if it's cognitive or not. I think that comes later. Then next at, say, 2 o'clock on a clock, you have the robotic, climbing, actuation, locomotion, and sensing. Then say about 3 o'clock, we have the natural language processing. Oh, because that has to run through a computer. We can't possibly learn our text or our speech through discussing with people or hearing books or learning to speak. No, we have to have the computer do it. At 4 o'clock, automated planning and scheduling. So everything you do is going to be automated either through your planning or your scheduling. Your optimization, this would be about 6 o'clock. Particle swarm optimization. Now, don't ask me what that is because I have no idea, but if you have a techie listening, hopefully they will comment and tell us what that is. Differential evolution. Well, differentiation education means I can tell the difference between things. So again, what are we evolving? What are we trying to tell the differences in? Then we have genetic algorithms and evolutionary algorithms. Think about all those high-stake tests our children are taking right now, and even our young people and our adults who are in education. These things are massive as far as the algorithms that are being tweaked and turned around to make it appear, hey, we're acing this test when we might be, but what if it's so manipulated the data that you think you're smart, you're told you're smart, and then you go out and you fall flat on your face because guess what? You can't think your way out of the paper bag. But let's move on because there's even more. You have the components of artificial intelligence: knowledge, representation, and reasoning. So in other words, I don't need to think. I'm going to let my AI computer do it for me. Perception, action, communication, planning, and learning, Dr. Elena. Holy cow, all through AI. The types of AI, this would be about 9 o'clock on your clock. Artificial super intelligence, artificial general intelligence, artificial neuro intelligence. Okay? Again, a techie would need to talk with us because I really don't know the differences between those. Then we have about 10 o'clock, we have machine learning. This is where you have supervised learning. You have unsupervised learning. And let's see, I can't read that last one. It is, Learning for a Lifetime, I believe it is. Some of the font they use is in yellow, so it's very hard to tell. And then the last one, which was about 11 o'clock, knowledge-based systems. Again, whose knowledge? It's supposed to be my knowledge that I'm being able to gain for myself to put it in phrases and in shapes and forms that I can understand. But this is running it through AI. And here we have intelligence agents, linked system, care-based reasoning, and expert systems. Does this mean we're going to have AI agents running through the nation going, sorry, you're not intelligent enough for this AI? Blah.
I mean, when you think about this, it's so colorless. There's no life to this type of system of education. I don't know if it's education or if it's indoctrination. I'm not sure. But where's the fun in this? Where's the art in this? Where's the thing that pulls us together as a country or a community or humanity for that matter? It's as if it's you just get pushed along and you're part of a whole and you're just grist for the mill, you know, in the classic sense.
Right. Well, you know, this particular document came out while Dr. Cardona was still in office. And being that we don't even have a Secretary of Education who's been confirmed yet, I think her hearing is tomorrow. But if you look at what a train wreck she has been as far as in the Department of Labor, oh, gee, well, guess what? You've got an administration that's more concerned about data, cyber coins, and workforce and economy than you are education. Oh, sure, you'll hear, oh, yeah, we're going to shut down the Department of Education. But how many times have we talked about this, Dr. Elena, that the Every Student Succeeds Act put economy over education by demanding that education be aligned to workforce preparation? And this stupid report that I'm looking at, three ways to center educators as we conceptualize humans in the loop of artificial intelligence. They're using a concentric circle. So just replace that with a hamster wheel and you got it. You're going to always be going.
Is there a...
Oh, my stars.
Is it possible that if you decentralize and it goes back to the states, that this path we're on could be taken a different direction, right? Because if the states are not into this, and every state's different, obviously, maybe we can go back. Some states will go back to originally what education was designed for. Well, I mean, was it really designed for everybody to be everything they could be, or was it designed for them to be part of a workforce? That's the initial question that I have.
Right. Well, let's see here. When you have people who have funded an education system like Rockefeller, and we've talked about him before, how he gave millions and billions of dollars to reform healthcare in America. He gave millions and billions of dollars to reform education in America to do what? Not to prop up American attitudes, values, and beliefs, but to make it more global, to make it more controlled. And, you know, education is not preparing our children for education. It's preparing them for work. It's indoctrinating them. And, you know, again, we've talked about this, and it's absolutely mind-boggling. Now, you did bring up a good point. Let's say it gets decentralized. Well, here's why I don't think it will. The push for school choice. We're somehow giving the illusion to freedom to parents that your child will be able to go to any school they want. They'll be able to use the money any way they want that's attached to education freedom, supposedly. But what they're not understanding, and the research has proven it, and you and I have talked about this ad nauseum, is that the goal is to give the illusion that you're going to have a choice. But when you look at Every Student Succeeds Act, on page 17 of the final version of the law that was signed by Obama, it said, all education must be aligned. It didn't say some education should be. It said all education must be aligned to the same post-secondary readiness standards as laid out by the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. That, my dear, wiped out the choices we had and predicted and mandated that every form of education must be the same. So, where's the choice? If it's all got to be aligned to the same thing and it's been mandated, why in the world would we think we still have choice? We don't. The goal of school choice is to go after your private schools, your parochial schools, your hybrid schools, your magnet schools, your home schools, and shut them down. Rebrand them as public, put it all under the federal government so that the federal government can now look at the United Nations and go, see what a good job we did? Because after all, the school choice illusion came from the United Nations and is living out in the Sustainable Development Goal number 4, which is called Quality Education for All. So this is why I don't think even if the states got their stuff together and said, okay, yeah, US Ed's been shut down, I can run my school the way I want to in my state. What state will give up the federal funding that comes not from the Department of Education because supposedly it's closed, but what happens when it comes from Health and Human Services or the State Department or the Treasury Department, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Transportation, the Labor Department, because those are the entities that will take over education.
So you still think, well, it is the way of the world, isn't it? That money, follow the money, you know, but the intention, I'm hopeful that the intention will be different. So let's take our second break, because I want to explore. You said a mouthful, and you're speaking about what's come and what we're living with, and I get that. I'm hoping that we have more power than to just lay down and take this. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Understanding health insurance is becoming more challenging. If you currently have insurance, you probably noticed that it costs more to see your doctor. And if you're able to keep your doctor, it takes longer to get an appointment. There's bad news and good news. The bad news is this trend is predicted to continue. Your costs will likely continue to rise, while your healthcare choice and access will continue to fall. The good news is Peachtree ENT Center has the answer to this problem. We are committed to working with you. We specialize in providing affordable care for patients without insurance, those who are underinsured, and those with high deductible or catastrophic coverage. And we offer same-day appointments. You no longer have to choose between staying healthy and paying bills, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts. Call 404-591-9100 or visit us at peachtreeentcenter.com. We've won patient care awards and have the highest patient recommendations because I believe in practicing medicine the old-fashioned way. Practicing good medicine is based in listening to the patient and making a care plan that's individualized. The best medical care is given when there's a strong doctor-patient relationship built on mutual trust and respect. At Peachtree ENT Center, we believe in taking care of the whole patient because healing is more than writing a prescription. Whether you have a problem hearing or have frequent throat infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you'll be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you'll not be rushed and all of your questions will be answered. When possible, I will recommend natural treatments to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts. Call 404-591-9100 or visit us at peachtreeentcenter.com. Do you have problems with sinus pain and pressure? Do other people smell things that you don't? Have you lost the joy in eating because food just doesn't taste like it used to? Is your nose always stuffy no matter what you do? Maybe you have sinus or nasal polyps. These are generally benign growths that occur from a chronic sinus infection or allergies that are either undertreated or have not been treated at all. At Peachtree ENT Center, we specialize in minimally invasive balloon dilation surgery and correction of a deviated septum, as well as turbinate reduction surgery, all which can be done in the office. We use a state-of-the-art nasal telescope with a video camera so you can see the problem. You will be a partner in your care, and together we'll decide the course of action. Our philosophy is simple: to fix the problem, not just medicate the symptoms. But rest assured, all options will be offered before surgery is recommended, because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts. Call 404-591-9100 or visit us at peachtreeentcenter.com. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And before the break, Lynn, you're telling us what we're living in and how it's come to pass and what they want. You know, the education system is for parents and children, just like the healthcare system is. And is there a path where we can withdraw our consent? There are plenty of great teachers like yourself who've now gone independent. They're teaching in little pods of kids. That's a whole different mindset where you get to teach the way you want to, and you're kind of outside of this loop. I understand you got to take tests and all that sort of thing, but if more people felt that way and said, I'm not going to do this, would it make a difference?
Well, it absolutely would. I mean, you're talking to someone who has tried for decades to get people to understand that you've got to continue to be a nonconformist when it comes to your child. And how many people have told me, oh, well, that's not going to touch my family. This is not going to happen. And then look at everything that has happened. So would I love to see the Department of Education shut down? Yes. However, there is a way to do it, Dr. Elena, and we've talked about this. You have to first repeal the mandates and the streams of money that are taxpayer dollars that are being used against them when it comes to this sort of thing. You would have to repeal every federal law that connects to the Every Student Succeeds Act. That would include the Workforce and Innovation and Opportunity Act. That would include the Higher Education Act. That would include all the STEM acts that we've seen. It would need to roll. It would need to repeal the career tech education laws that Trump signed the first time in office. It would have to repeal the executive order that Obama had when he gutted the FERPA, which is the Family Education Right to Privacy Act. I mean, that is what is helping feed these data systems that are tracking our children. So if we could get those laws repealed from a federal level, because if you remember, per the Constitution, education was never supposed to be a federal entity. They were supposed to have no business whatsoever. In fact, Code US 20, Section 1232A of our federal law prohibits any federal agency any sort of direction when it comes to education. That includes funding. That would be the second thing that the states would have to say, you know what, we're going to live within our means. We're not going to take the federal funds. We're going to let our citizens use their taxpayer dollars in state so that we can decide what goes on in education. Well, here's why the feds would come back and say, well, no, 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 states, you can't do that, because if Every Student Succeeds Act is still in place, the federal government gets to call the shots, not the states. You see why it's so important to repeal the law first, then go after the funding.
I see. It's like a... It's a real puzzle, right? Every little piece is in the proper place. You can't tear it down unless you get rid of the underpinning of it.
Exactly. And this is one of the things that is being batted around since the campaign for this last election. Well, oh, yes, I'm going to appease everyone and I'm going to go in and I'm going to shut it down. Well, as I have told you and several other people on interviews that I've done for years, you might as well walk into a dark room, turn on the light, and watch the cockroaches scatter, because that is exactly what the government is hoping happens. Is that, yeah, that knee-jerk reaction happens. Yeah, it's shut down tomorrow. And then that means all those agencies, plus several others I didn't mention, already have contingency plans, as they've had for years, to when education shuts down. Everything has been strategically planned for just the right moment so that it can appear that the public is being appeased. But if the public is not aware of how to do this correctly, they're going to think, oh, all is well. My state can have education back. Well, guess what? Your state should have never been dumb enough to give up its sovereignty like it did all those years ago, the minute it took the first federal funding for education. And no politician at a government level is going to lightly pull that. But guess what? It's the truth.
So if you were to, you know, you had a magic wand on this, I know you said that you'd repeal or get rid of these laws, but we have to build a consensus to push this inertia forward.
Right.
So do parents have to go to their state legislature? How would they start the process? I mean, to me, it's like take your kid out and start finding a good teacher and do you. But what can parents do to make this system pay attention?
Well, first of all, you can use the Civil Rights Act of 1981, Section 1983, where you can actually go in and sue every single school board member, every state legislator, every federal legislator who has somehow used all this corruption to impede upon your child's right to privacy or deprive them of their right of an education. Because if you look at your state constitution, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, it is our privilege and our honor to educate your child as being a part of our state. Now, it won't be worded exactly like that. I'm putting it very nicely, but that is the goal of state-run education. But again, when the state sold themselves out, it was that they sold out their children from 5 to 17, and we've talked about this before, because the federal funding is not based on public educated children from the ages of 5 to 17. No, it bases the number of funds that your state gets off of every single child, no matter where they go to school, ages 5 to 17. And that's the basis for the federal funding. So when the government tells you that all students will be educated the same way, they're not talking about all public students, public school students. They're talking about every child from the age of 5 to 17. We'll look at your state's policies and laws on what is the age the child needs to start going to school. If it's like my study, compulsory education starts at 7. Well, there's another tenet. If you get rid of compulsory education, that would free up the parents to be able to say, okay, when Johnny and Susie are ready for school, let's say some child is ready at 6. Another child might not be ready till 8. But if you had the freedom, the true freedom to say, this is when, you know, they're showing signs of being ready to learn. Instead, they're being told, okay, Johnny and Susie have to show up at the door when they're 7 years old in my state. And if they go to preschool, which is before age 7, they have to come to preschool knowing their ABCs and their 1, 2, 3s and their colors. And guess what? Way back in the dark ages when I was in kindergarten, we were taught in kindergarten our ABCs and our 1, 2, 3s and our colors. We didn't already have to show up at the door knowing all that stuff. I mean, if that was the case, everybody would be homeschooling, because the parents have much pressure to work and then educate Johnny and Susie, or have some other person come in and educate them, so that on the first day of kindergarten or preschool or whenever it is they first show up, they're already completing this checklist that the system has created for these children who still don't know their belly button from a hole in the ground.
Okay, I have to stop you there on that one, because that's great. So who's supposed to teach the child all of this before they enter school? And I guess my bigger question is, why? Part of it is everybody being, you know, socialization, learning these things. What's the benefit to having the child come in with that much, you know, knowledge before school? I don't understand why that would be the case. Why would they care?
Well, it has shifted. The burden has shifted from the teacher to the family. And then the school system is going to have the audacity to turn around and tell you as mom and dad that you're not doing a good enough job. And so now we need to send in a change agent from the government to help you along, because after all, you didn't send them to school knowing their ABCs and 1, 2, 3s and their colors. I mean, that sounds very drastic, but yeah. Guess what? It has happened in states. It absolutely has.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It has. Well, the Department of Education has a nice, warm-sounding name for it, Dr. Elaine. It's called a family ambassador, or family engagement, or student supports.
These names are amazing. Oh, my. Let's take a break, because I have to digest this myself. So let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Sidera's medical cost-sharing community provides a path for people to protect their health and their wealth at the same time. It's a perfect blend of personal responsibility and community care, and it's an incredible way to reduce healthcare costs. I highly encourage you to break out of the status quo and look into this as an option. Please check it out by visiting Sidera.com/controlyourhealth or call 1-855-998-8075. Understanding health insurance is becoming more challenging. If you currently have insurance, you've probably noticed that it costs more to see your doctor. And if you're able to keep your doctor, it takes longer to get an appointment. There's bad news and good news. The bad news is this trend is predicted to continue. your costs will likely continue to rise, while your healthcare choice and access will continue to fall. The good news is Peachtree ENT Center has the answer to this problem. We are committed to working with you. We specialize in providing affordable care for patients without insurance, those who are underinsured, and those with high deductible or catastrophic coverage. And we offer same-day appointments. You no longer have to choose between staying healthy and paying bills because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts. Call 404-591-9100 or visit us at peachtreeentcenter.com.
You're listening to Dr. Elena George, advocate for Living in the Solution.
Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And Lynn, how can people reach you?
You can find me at commoncorediva.com. That is my website. You can find me on Twitter, X, whatever they call it now, at Common Core Diva. You can find me on Facebook as Common Core Diva 2023. For some reason, my regular Common Core page got taken down. Facebook thought I had done something stupid, and so they decided to take my original page down. So when I made a new one, I said, well, I'm going to date this one so that way people can find it. So it's Common Core Diva 2023. You can also schedule me to come speak at your group. You can email me at info@commoncorediva.com. We can set up in-person or online meetings, and we can work out logistics for that. But one of the calls of action that I already gave was use that particular part of the Civil Rights Law from 1981, Section 1983, and we've talked about that one quite a bit. You can also learn from reading these resources that will hopefully be in the archives for your audience, because the more you know about what the system is planning for you, the more you can find ways to say, no, that's against my civil rights. That's against my child's right to privacy. That violates, you know, all kinds of things. And look at what your state law is saying, what's allowed, what's not allowed. Because in this area of artificial intelligence, that this beta generation is going to be so swamped with that it's going to control and consume every part of them, we can have a foot in the door that says, wait a minute, not quite so fast. Maybe we don't have a baby who's being born in this particular generation, but if we don't start helping lead by example for parents who do or may have one somewhere in this particular time generation, which is 2025 to 2039, then we really can't say we've been part of the solution. So I'm going to read the recommendations that the Department of Education have. There are only 7 of them. But this is where they're calling their leaders to action to help grease the wheel for more AI so we can reverse it from a citizen action and say, here's how we throw a wrench in the machine and stop this. The first recommendation: emphasize humans in the loop. You start with a central recommendation that says you have to have AI that it can help you. Well, then we need to show in ways where AI is already posing dangers. We need to look at the AI Bill of Rights, which I've done a show on another interview, where we discuss just how much of a front this is giving to our data privacy, how much it's attacking our just being a human and turning us into a part of a computer bit. What is America doing with the AI Bill of Rights? You need to know. And if you don't, reach out to me through the email, info@commoncorediva.com. I can help you out with that. All right, we're going to go second recommendation. Align AI models to a shared vision for education. No, let's have conversations about shared visions for education at a local level. Okay, this relies again on the Every Student Succeeds Act being in place, also the gutted version of FERPA because it's never been reinstated. All right, our third one. Let's see here. Design using modern learning principles. No. Let's not use modern learning principles because we're not learning anything. I mean, if you're a person who looks at statistics, you're going to see the latest testing scores and know our students are not learning. Let's go back to the tried and true, what worked, teaching phonics, waiting until a child is old enough to understand what critical thinking is, using educators who really can think beyond Common Core and all the globalization. All right, number four, prioritize strengthening trust. Well, let's build trust again through people, not through computers. Number five, inform and involve your educators. Yeah, let's inform and involve our educators of what we, the people, taxpayer, is willing to fund and what they're not willing to fund. And let's see, what is our next one? Focus research and development on addressing context and enhancing trust and safety. Well, a lot of research and development has been thrown at education, especially since Common Core has come into town. And what has it proven? That our children are no better off. In fact, they're worse off than before Common Core. So, so much on research and development. Again, let's go back to what's tried and true that has proven itself to be trustworthy and safe. Let's go back to the way where we educated children how to think, not what to think. And finally, the last recommendation from the Department of Education, develop education-specific guidelines and guardrails. Well, we do know that our children, as they grow, do need guidelines and guardrails, but not from a government-described or government-mandated system. They need this from mom or dad or whoever their guardian is. They need to know that the guidelines and guardrails they have are family attitudes, values, and beliefs. And if those don't align with everyone else in the classroom, so what? As long as everyone is being safe and polite, it's the way we used to do things, and we all got along, and I don't see anything wrong with that. Again, it is not bowing to a government system that sees you as a number or a computer chip. It sees you as a population that sees you as a living, breathing, wonderful creation with skills and gifts that a school system is willing to rob from you.
And it follows you after that to the rest of your life, honestly. Uh-huh. And I think I can speak to that with healthcare as well. I mean, we're seeing this population-based healthcare, which completely runs over the individual. And it's uh-huh. one size fits all, no thought involved at all. It's just prescribed. And I'm seeing a little bit of a pendulum swing because patients are now looking to fix the problem instead of just managing the symptom. I'm praying also that it'll happen on the parent side in the education system, where I don't care what walk of life you come from. If your child is going to school and coming back defeated or their spirit broken or not having a relationship with their family or God, there's something wrong and you need to take a step, don't you think?
Right. Right, you absolutely do. Or if they come home going, hey, well, I'm not supposed to trust you because you're my parent. Yeah. And my teacher says that my parents mean me harm because this test said that blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, even worse, come home going, you know, I'm not who you think I am. My goodness gracious, what have we done to our children? What are we doing to our families? And I think that's the goal. I think the government and the system wants so much to chew up the family to become nothing more than just a breeding unit. I mean, look at the communist nations. Look at the nations with Nazism. What did they want the parents to do? Birth the baby, and the system would take it from there. Is that really what we want in America?
I would have to say no. And we've kind of been on that track for the last maybe 20 years. It uh-huh. hasn't made anybody better. There's more depression in the teens. There's uh-huh. suicide. There's confusion about who they are, what they want to do. Their goals of, you know, being as successful as their parents are gone, really, from an economic standpoint. Can they even afford to buy a house or to have a job that actually they can thrive on, not just survive, like not just sustain themselves with some basic nonsense and, you know, I guess delude themselves or somehow live in an alternate universe of TikTok or whatever, as if that's reality. It's not healthy. And I don't think the society as a whole is happy. There's no studies that I'm seeing that says people who live in a virtual world are happier. Well, they're not.
Right. They're not. They're absolutely not. In fact, I did an interview a couple of years ago where there's this one, I think it is, app that's being developed so that, let's say, your most beloved person dies. Well, because you participated in enough AI-generated garbage, you can have this person still with you in a virtual world. So instead of you moving on and healing, or you moving on and living a productive life, what are you doing? You're stuck in a pretend world with someone who's not even there anymore. Mm-hmm. But because you have that image of them, and you have the ability to be able to have a one-on-one conversation, because enough, that's what the artificial intelligence does with your voice, how are you ever going to be able to move on?
It's not healthy. It's not.
It's not. But go. Let's go back for just a second. Let's go back. You said, you know, this has been happening in what, the past 20 years.
Yeah.
All right. Let's look at our generations. The demise of American education started back in the Silent Generation, when you had a socialistic person come over. Well, excuse me. It started before then. Back in the 1800s, you had a socialistic person by the name of Robert Owen. Brought socialism over to America, and he inserted it into education. This was in the late 1800s. All right, if you look at the Elementary Secondary Education Act of 1965, well, that would have been the very first year of Generation X. If you start looking at the demise of where education went from then, that's been well over 40 years. But very definitely, Common Core has affected Generation Z and Generation Alpha. It started to hit the very last years of the millennials back in 96, but it really didn't ramp up until around 2008, 2009, when Common Core rolled out. Then you would have to look at 2004 when Bill Gates signed the One World Curriculum Agreement with UNESCO. That was the whole goal. So your entire generations have been repeatedly attacked when it comes to education. This is what the government says it should look like. This is what the government says it should be taught. These are who should be taught. These are who should be left out. BS. It shouldn't be like this.
I couldn't have said it better. But at some point, we have to withdraw our consent. That's my mantra these days. So withdraw your consent from it. If it's not helping you and it's hurting you, and you can see your child fade away in any way, whether they're on ADD meds or depression meds, uh-huh. Every child should be bouncing off the walls happy, right? Why are they in this state where they don't feel good enough? They don't feel happy. They don't feel like there's a future. That is dystopic.
It is, but the reason why is because we have all these formative assessments. We have all these adverse childhood experience assessments, and we've talked about these before, Dr. Elena, where the test is having them rate their parents and their family. Is anyone touching you in ways they shouldn't? Is anyone making you go to church when you don't want to go? Is anyone drinking excessively or taking drugs? Or do you see them smoke? Or do you see them swear? Or do you see why in the name of all that's holy would a child feel okay saying these things to a teacher? If they're going to be saying any of this, it should be to a counselor, a pastor, or a law enforcement, because they were supposed to provide protection and support. I tell you what, if I had gone home from school with an assessment, you know, with all these very nosy questions about what goes on at home, my parents would have walked down to the school and said, there's no way she's answering this. But we haven't had parents do that, first of all, because maybe they don't know what's going on. But second of all, they're thinking, well, it takes a village. No, it really doesn't. It takes a family.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better. On that note, and that call to action, I hate to end the show, but we were at that point. I just want to make sure people know again how to reach you, because you're a treasure, and it's now time for people to step up. No more let someone else do it for me. You must be an advocate for your patient, for your child, and your patient if you're a doctor.
You absolutely need to. But remember, as a parent, it is a God-given right to have the honor and the privilege and the responsibility to nurture and to guide, not pass it off to someone else.
I agree.
Find me at commoncorediva.com. You can email me for speaking or any questions that you have, info@commoncorediva.com. And again, on my website, I have a donate page if you wish to financially bless any of the work that I do for you, because I do it out of the goodness of my heart. Please know that I would welcome any donation, no matter how big or small. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn. You're, again, a blessing and a treasure. I feel honored to call you my friend.
Thank you so much, my dear. And as far as your audience, you know, listen, share, and we'll talk again.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for joining me, and thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.